This conference is being recorded.
Okay.
All right, Dan?
Yeah.
Okay. So, go ahead to the documents. Well, who joined us?
Where's the document?
Rabbi, you're incredible.
I am incredible.
Well, in many ways. Which aspect of my incredibleness are you referring to now?
Why limit it?
We can only work within our limited perception of the incredibleness. So the particular aspect.
I see it. I got the document.
That we had just. I was talking to Debora of saying, let's look at the document. I hear the ding, and there you are, and you're ready with the document.
And I know I even got the document right now.
Unbelievable timing.
That's it. While simultaneously managing all my crazy kids.
Oh my gosh! See, that's what I'm saying. I wasn't even aware of the incredibleness.
That's it.
So the moving on to the onto the documents.
I actually don't. Did you just send it today?
No, it's the same document as last week, Rambam the Renaissance Man, let's skip ahead to the bottom.
Are you guys having Gmail problems?
I'm not.
My Gmail has been really slow, the past 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not having any trouble.
Okay.
Okay, so, I got a little bit bogged down last week. So I don't want to go through all the sources that we were talking about last week. Whoa. Hello, who's that? Who just joined us?
Hi, this is Yaakov.
Hey, Yaakov.
Hi.
I wanted to chat with you about wiki texts. Do you know anything about that?
Not much.
Oh, okay. All right. So
Matt Schneeweiss is your man.
What?
I believe Matt Schneeweiss is your man.
No, Matt Schneeweiss recommended Yaakov. He doesn't know anything about it. Never.
What do you want to know about it?
Oh, we'll talk about it later. I don't mean I want to talk about it.
We'll speak.
Yeah. I was wondering if it would be something that we might be able to use to make a text of the Rambam with some footnotes. But these things oftentimes look simpler than they are. All right. So what I wanted to do was I wanted to skip ahead to get a little bit bogged down in the premises last week. And I'd rather just go to what it is I wanted to work on, and that is the introduction to the Perush Mishnayos. Now, the introduction to the Perush Mishnayos begins with two things, and that is one thing is the pasuk of B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam, the pasuk fragment of B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam, which I'm putting in red, and that is not particular to this work. Each and every work of the Rambam has that on it. The Mishnah Torah has it, the Perush Mishnayos has it, the Maor Nebuchim has it. That seems to be a consistent refrain of the Rambam. So, but I'm not going to deal with that right now. That's what I was trying to deal with last week, but I got a little bit bogged down in premises. Because really, B'Shem Hashem, Kel Olam, is a reference point to Avram Avinu. But we'll come back to that. And what I want to do is the Perush Mishnayos, and we'll see how the Perush Mishnayos is, in fact, a part of a certain class or a genus of works, which all of them share in common the characteristic of B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam. Now, I'm just going to read, and I put certain things in blue, which I want to emphasize, and there's a sort of a morphing here of a blog piece I'm going to write and this learning. So excuse a little bit of a sloppy style. So basically what it has is this. This is the very first statement. It's sort of a preface to the work, to the introduction to the work. And it goes like this. Hitkabtsu chachamim v'imdu alem edchem.
Rabbi, I'm sorry, I don't know where you are.
I'm on the very bottom of the document that Rabbi Rosenblatt entitled the Rambam the Renaissance Man.
Okay.
The very bottom, right? You see it?
Yes, thank you.
Hitkabtsu chachamim v'imdu alem edchem. Gather chachamim and stand at attention at your place. Ki zeved tov azav etchem, because I will give you a good zeved. What a zeved is, we'll talk about in a second. Lechu vanim shimuli, go ahead, children, and listen to me. Yirat Hashem alam etchem. I will teach you Yirat Hashem. Now, if we think for a second what's happening here, and if we think particularly back to the very first time the Parish Mishnayos was presented to the kahal of the oilam of the of Torah learners, we would expect that a work of this magnitude. There would be some sort of shevach v'hodaya l'Hashem on the issue. But if we look at what's happening here, we'll see that that this is not exactly what's happening here. There is that later on in the preface. There's much talk about the great feast that Rambam has prepared, and he and his readership will feast upon it together. That's more along the lines of what one would expect. An anticipation of the great tanug, the great pleasure that will be able to be shared between Rebbe and Talmud in this limud. But that's not the way it begins. And if we scrutinize what's happening here, we'll see it does not begin with a celebratory note, but rather a something else. And what that something else is, I want to focus on. Now, what's interesting is that Rambam presents himself in allusion as in some way like great figures in the Tanakh. Through B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam, he presents himself as being somehow a standard bearer of Avraham Avinu. Through Zeved Tova Zeved Chen, there's only one place in Tanakh where the word Zeved is used, and certainly in this term, Zeved Tov Zeved Chen, and that is Leah Imenu. When Leah Imenu, you take a look at a little bit further down, I have it there, but Tomer Leah, Zvadani Elokim Oti Zeved Tov, Hapa'am Yizbilini Ishi Kilati Loshi Shabanim, So that's the only place in the entire Tanakh where the word Zevet is used, and it's used, as you can see, in the exact way that the Rambam is saying. Zvadani Elohim Oti Zevet Tov. So as Leah is the recipient of Zevet Tov, you know, from Hashem, Rambam is the giver of Zevet Tov to the Chachamim. So that's one relationship. There's the Rambam as the continuer of the legacy of Avraham Avinu. Then there's the Rambam in his relationship to the Chachamim. And in his relationship to Chachamim, he's somehow similar to Leah. There's something similar in his relationship to the Chachamim as what happened to Leah. Then there's a third one. Lechu banim shimuli. Go ahead, banim, and listen to me. Yirat Hashem alam etchem. I will teach you Yirat Hashem. Now, this is the first one is a certain play, an allusion on the pasuk. It's not exactly the pasuk, but what he says to the banim is exactly a pasuk. It's a pasuk from Tehillim, and it's referring to David HaMelech, b'shematoy tamoth mi'Avimelech, when David had to run away from Shaul, he was in front of Avimelech. He had to pretend he was a crazy man, and he escaped death by that stratagem, and then returned to Israel, or to a place where I don't know if it was Israel, I forget where it was exactly, but a place where he could regroup after running away from Shaul, and he called out to Israel to join him, and he said, and his family joined him, and certain other individuals joined him, that the Tanakh identifies as being everyone who had an argument, everyone who had a problem, they joined David, and he became their leader. So his family joined him, and these unconventional people. That was his group. And what he said to them was, "Lechu vanim shimuli yirat Hashem al amitzan." That's what he said to them at that point. So what's interesting here is, what exactly is the unifying theme here? What exactly is Rambam saying in this very first beginning of his preface to his magnum opus of the Perish Mishnayos? What is this message? Is he Avram Avinu? Is he somehow related to the story of Leah, or is he somehow David HaMelech? What exactly is going on here? So in terms of the identity that he's assuming, or that he's claiming continuation of, that's a little bit confusing. Now, what else is interesting is what he's saying, that regardless of who he is, of what his character identity is, the message he's giving is interesting as well. You'll notice that what's he saying to do? Regardless of who he is, which we'll clarify in a second, who is Rambam, and who is his audience? But what's he telling his audience to do? No, I'm asking rhetorically. I'm saying, what do you think? What's he telling you to do?
What does Imdu al Omedcha mean?
Hold on one second, Dan. So, what do you say? There's Mendel's here. I don't know if you guys remember Mendel, but he's here right in the house with me, along with my wife. Go ahead.
Mendel Bornstein?
Mendel Bornstein.
Hey.
Hi.
It's Dan Levine.
How you doing?
All right.
So,
What does Imdu al Omed?
Hold just one second, Dan. Let me finish what you're saying. Go ahead. So Mendel's saying that he's telling the Chachamim to stand at attention, and if they're not respectful of him, the Rambam, he's bringing great people like Leah. Well, David is—he's not talking to the Chachamim anymore when he's bringing up David. That's his banim, that's his students, that's his family that joins him in his place, in his exile there, and the unconventional people who join him. So the Chachamim is one message. They should imdu al amidchem. And the banim is a different message, and that is yirat Hashem al amidchem. So insofar as the banim, as the Chachamim are concerned, Mendel says he's telling them to listen and to with proper respect to him, even which way they would accord to Leah and Nina. What are you saying, Dan?
No, I just wanted to know what imdu al amidchem means.
Stand in your places.
What does that mean? Like if you're sitting, stand up.
Well, it seems that what he's saying to the Chachamim is in contrast to what he's saying to his banim. His banim is saying lechu, they should go, they should walk, they should move, right?
Okay.
The Chachamim should stop moving and stand still in place. Imdu al amidchem. The Chachamim should stand. The banim should walk. Lechu. Okay, and any other thoughts?
Well, what comes to mind a little bit is, you know, the metaphor of, breaking the wood thing to attract people into the dojo.
Uh-huh.
It's like a...
But he hasn't done anything yet.
Right, but he's saying that I'm gonna give you a zevet as a crown, right?
A zevet is a gift, a tremendous gift.
Okay, so he's saying he's going to give the Chachamim a tremendous gift. And
right.
And he's going to give the Banim a Yiras Hashem. So
correct.
He's saying I'm going to give you these wonderful things. So he's trying to make them listen carefully.
Why? Well, later on, immediately after this, he's going to go into the tremendous work he did. He took from the Sifri, he took from the Sifra, he took from here, he took from there, and he made a tremendous feast, and they were going to feast together. So what is this? So talk about the tremendous work that went into making the feast, and feast before Hashem and the Shulchan Aruch, which Rambam has prepared, and the wine that he has created, and the meat he's created, and the bread he has created. So describe the great feast and enjoy the feast together. What is this?
This is Akdama to Parish Mishnayis. This is
Akdama to the Parish Mishnayis. So what is this? What function is this serving?
Well, he's not simply introducing a... In other words, if you're introducing a great sefer within a given paradigm, you'll start with a Shevach Hashem about how you got to this point to be able to add a meaningful contribution. That's category number one. Category number two is, if you're going to bring a brand new paradigm and you're asking the Chachamim to stop what they're doing, which is not effective or wrong or misguided, he's saying, listen up, focus your attention on what I'm going to present to you. And to the children, he's saying, I'm going to give you, my students, Yiras Hashem, which is the most foundational, which means that, you know, Yiras Hashem. So the basic Jewish principle to function as a Jew. So he's introducing to them, I'm going to give for the Chacham the great Zeved, which is the brand new paradigm, which then they can shift in all their data into a new framework and be profoundly more meaningful. And for the Talmud, the young Talmud, because they can get a paradigm, they can get something. They can get the most basic building block, so Yiras Hashem.
Okay.
So that's why it's not the normal introduction, like the Ravak to Chumash is start off with a tefillah and another Rishonim.
So I agree with Rabbi Rosenthal. And what I'd like to do is I would like to work through now exactly the concept that the Rambam is talking about and show how that flows naturally and easily exactly through the characters that he's choosing, that Rambam is choosing, and this is the unifying theme. Now, in reality, the unifying theme comes from B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam, but I'm going to back my way into that via the Banim. So let's take a look at what he says to the Banim. L'chu vanim shimu li yirat Hashem alam etchem. That's David. So in his relationship to his banim, Rambam says lechu banim, they should go. And yirat Hashem alam etchem, I will teach you yirat Hashem. Now what exactly is he saying? Where should they go from, and where should they go to? Where are they going? Where are they coming from, and where are they going to? And we can if we look at the story, I think it's pretty clear where the Banim are going from and where they're going to. Where are they coming from?
Well,
where the bunion coming from in the story about David? So Mendel says they're coming from Sheol. They're coming from the kingship of Israel, which is under the governance of Sheol. And that's the point that the Tanakh makes. Who's going to come? Is the family of David, and those who are unconventional in the existing community. Those are the people who will have the wherewithal to disconnect themselves from the existing order and join with David. You see? Now, therefore, what we're talking about here, and I think this is the key point, is that Rambam cannot go immediately into the great good and benefit, developmental nourishment that he can give to the souls of his bunny. Because every one of his banim, and there's two basic categories of banim that he has. Banim who recognize that they are banim, you see? He must teach them a lesson before they can benefit from the great good that he's going to give them. And the other is people who are also banim, but who think that they are not because they are chachamim. Both have to, in a certain sense, adjust their identities. The banim have to adjust their identities, and the chachamim have to adjust their identities. And before there can be a shared feasting on the Shulchan Aruch of the Rambam. Now, how so? And what is this?
Rabbi, it's also important to point out that at this point, the Rambam is all 30 years old.
Yeah, he's a very, very young man. I don't know that that's really the issue, but it might be a part of the issue, but it's certainly an issue. Now,
well, in other words, that you can't. First of all, it's hard enough to bring a new paradigm into any intellectual discipline, and specifically, if you're a little pisher, people are not going to will mock of you as being anything.
True, but he doesn't make.
So
any
he's coming in there, being a revolutionary, age 30.
It's true, but he doesn't make any reference to that whatsoever. He makes no reference to Aniyat Seir, nothing. You know, it's purely a conceptual matter. It's not a Hareni Kiven Shivim Shanayah show. You know, he doesn't even make any reference to that. So the what's the point? So if let's build it out of what David is saying, which is really, I think, the clearest place to see what it is. The real issue here is that the people are under a governance of Sheol, therefore what David is saying is yes, they should come to him, but Yirat Hashem alamidchem. Why Yirat Hashem alamidchem? What's the issue here? What does Yirat Hashem have to do with it? Really? So, what Yirat Hashem really is, as we see in the Rambam, is a proper understanding of one's own self in light of the fact that one is a member of a system of Chochmah. Avas Hashem is a appreciation of the theoretical beauty of Chachmah, not in application to one's personal affairs. That's a hisboninus. In hisboninus, as in theoretical reality, Ava is the yearning to have a complete, or as complete an understanding of Hashem's Chachmah, which points to him, as one can have. Yira is something else. That has to do with Chishuv. Chishuv means a perceiving of one's own, how Chachmah impacts upon one's own derech insofar as one is existing in the material world. So why would Rambam be focusing in on with his banim that they should go, but that going should be tempered with Yiras Hashem? What really is he talking to? And here I think lies the essence of the issue. all groups, Chachamim and Chachamim alike, are going to require a mutzer, are going to require a shift in their derech in order to benefit from the Rambam and not be harmed. Let's start with the why. Because of the very nature of the environment of a Jewish people governed by a Shaul. So in what sense is the Jewish people in Rambam's time governed by a Shaul? Go ahead. So my wife is saying that Shaul implies a king who was powerful and mighty, and that's certainly true. Shaul was very tall. He was very physically attractive. He was a heroic figure. It's true. But he was an answer to the people's desire for a hero figure as a king, as we saw before. As we learned before, insofar as Shmuel was concerned, Shmuel was very against the whole concept of a king, and Shaul was the first expression of the people's immature notion of a king and a leadership as fitting into their imaginative image of a hero figure. Well, true. But that's not all that Shaul was. Shaul was not just a hero figure. There was something much more fundamental. The Tanakh doesn't tremendously emphasize Shaul as a hero figure. It emphasizes, but not tremendously. It emphasizes something else. What was the essence of Shaul? What was the essence of his problem?
Right, that's the point. Just, what do you mean in your question that the Rambam is responding to people under Shaul? Because Shaul system.
What I'm saying is, what I'm suggesting is that by speaking to his Talmidim in the words of David, right, when he was running away from Shaul, in essence, what he's saying is that he is like David running away from Shaul. That his circumstance here, given the Parish Mishnayos, is a similar sort of Masora as the Masora that David was doing. There's a million choices of Masora that the Rambam could have chosen. Why did he choose the Masora of a David when he's running away from Shaul? The reason is, and I'll show you, it's not just this one pasuk, it's the theme of the entire piece here, is that because he's equating his circumstances in Masora to the Masora of David when he was running away from Shaul. Which means that he's saying... Go ahead, David, go ahead.
No, I just don't understand it. Why not just say simply that he's using these psukim because they contain the ideas that are relevant to his thing, not because the circumstances are the same, but because there are certain ideas of Torah, Hashrach, of Masara, whatever it is, which is what he's talking about. Where do you see this, you know, that the context of what David was facing is relevant to what the Rambam is doing?
Because I think that what we will see is that the Rambam, not just here, but in all his choices of psukim, always chooses the psukim. And this will go straight throughout the Mor Nevuchim and the Mishnah Torah and everywhere. Whenever he chooses a pasuk through which to communicate, it's not an arbitrary choice, but rather it's the idea in the exact context that pasuk is referring to. There's a million what? There's no other psukim that talk about Yirat Hashem. There's a million psukim that talk about Yirat Hashem. What this pasuk offers is not that a person should know Yirat Hashem. I mean, Mishle is full of a million examples of Yirat Hashem. What this pasuk offers is a unique circumstance of teaching Yirat Hashem by David HaMelech in a certain circumstance. That's what's unique about
Rabbi?
It. What,
Rabbi?
Go ahead. Yeah.
Isn't the main point is that Shaul in this situation had basically gone essentially crazy,
right.
And basically was willing because his power is being threatened by David, he has made David the enemy of the state. He has marshaled all the forces to destroy David to maintain his power. So he had become completely corrupt. So basically, if he's corrupt, then by definition, his people are, his followers, have, you know, who are aligning themselves with him, have to partake of that to some degree.
Now, what caused what was the ultimate root of his problem? The ultimate root of his problem was a tremendous depression. David had been in front of him playing musical instruments. Why had David been in front of him playing musical instruments? The reason why...
Why was he doing that?
Why?
Because the Shekhinah, well, it seems to be that even though it's a removal of his encounter with the Shekhinah, his Ruach HaKodesh was pulled away from him.
Yes.
Or it's an active, Hashem was, there was an active element of what's causing the Ruach Ra.
That's right.
It's not clear. Is the Ruach Ra a positive or removal of the removal of the positive that gave him that negative state?
That's
not clear.
Right. David had been in front of Shaul to play the musical instrument because Shaul had been extremely depressed. And the reason why he was extremely depressed was because the relationship to Chochmas Hashem that he had had before as a Navi, he wasn't able to have anymore. He was disconnected from his previous relationship to the enjoyment of the Chochmas Hashem, of Nevuah. And that had made him terribly upset and seemed to have had an impact on his entire personality and was a foundational element in his paranoia and his anger with David as a source of his problem. Whereas in reality, his problem was not from David. His jealousy to David was his own emotional world. His real issue was a disconnect from Kirov HaLashem. His real problem was a disconnect from the... from connection to the to Hashem, to the Chochmas Hashem and the Shem Hashem. Now, what I'm arguing here is that this is in reality the foundation of what's happening here in the beginning of the introduction to the Perush Mishnayos, and that Rambam is dealing with this with a circumstance where the Jewish people is under the sway of a leadership which is disconnected, as Shaul was disconnected, from the Shem Hashem. And that this is leading to a misguided leadership, which is leading to a circumstance where he, the Rambam, in his teaching of the Shem Hashem, is going to be like David. He's going to be in exile. He's going to have Fanim who are under attack and pressure. And that needs to be addressed. The Chachamim need to be addressed. And the banim need to be addressed. Now, I would argue what needs to be addressed is different in both circumstances. In the case of the banim, what needs to be addressed is the nature of their halicha. Yes, on the one hand, they need to follow the teachings of Rambam or David, and that's necessary for their reconnection to the foundations of the Torah and to the Shem Hashem. But it must be done with a tremendous humility and Yirat Hashem. Namely, throughout the Tanakh, the entire story of David is one story of David on the one side teaching his banim Yirat Hashem and the Shem Hashem, but on the other hand, continuously holding them back from their desire to begin a revolutionary movement which will, by force, attack Shaul. And I've spoken about this many times with Rabbi Rosenthal. Perhaps the most poignant example of that is when Shaul is right in front of David there. And he's chasing him to kill him. And David he has him vulnerable. He could kill him right there and then. But he does not. Why? Because he is the Mashiach Hashem. And it's not for David to use military force to intrude into the Hanhagah of Israel. So the Banim, yes, need to learn from David. They need to learn from the Rambam if they are to feast upon what the Rambam had to give them. But that must be done in the context of a careful Yirat Hashem, in the sense of not bursting forth in a revolutionary manner to upset the leadership structure of Israel, even if Israel is being currently led by a leadership which is disconnected from the Shem Hashem and is disconnected and is therefore doing grievous harm to the Masorah and grievous harm to the Jewish people. It's not for this. It's not for this. For the banim of David, to by force change that situation. Now, what I'm going to show is that not only is this the unifying theme of these three psukim, but that the Rambam directly says this in his letters to his students, which we'll go to in a second. But first, let's see the unifying theme of Yirat Hashem in the sense of Rambam's restoration of the relationship to Nevuah and to the Shem Hashem as his essential contribution that is going to be happening in the Perish Mishnayos, and which carries through all through the Rambam's works, be it the Perish Mishnayos, be it the Mishnah Torah, be it the Mor Nevuah. Now, what I'm going to go back to and show that that is the meaning of the B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam. B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam is the pasuk that the Rambam brings down in all of his works, and in essence, that's what the Avram Avinu was doing. Avram Avinu's mission and work was to educate people who were locked into a circumstance in which the Shem Hashem wasn't known, a Derech HaChaim in which the Shem Hashem wasn't known, and he showed them and he reintroduced the concept of the Shem Hashem into a humanity which was not aware of the very existence of the Shem Hashem, which, if we think about it, is a little bit of a strange address to be addressing to the Jewish people. If Rambam had been speaking to non-Jews, B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam would be an appropriate quote, you know? But to be speaking to Jews is a little bit of a strange quote. And what I would argue is that the two fit together exactly correctly. B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam is the proper address to a Jewish people who is disconnected from Nevuah, who is disconnected from the Shem Hashem, whose derech is one of reconnection to that Shem Hashem. Now, that therefore now explains the middle point. What is the middle point? The middle point is the allusion to Leah. What's he saying to the Chachamim? Hidkatsu Chachamim v'indu alemedcheh. Gather Chachamim and stand in your place. Now, consider the contrast to what he suggests to his banim. His banim, he suggests, do a halicha in accordance with Yirat Hashem, which does not burst, which calculates carefully your true place in the social system. But the Chachamim says, imdu alemetchem. To a certain extent, the Chachamim are going to have to stop what they're doing, and they're going to have to stand and listen and receive something, receive a tremendous zevet. Now, what is that zevet? What is that zevet? Zevet is a gift which enables a person to assume their proper function in the Masorah, which they weren't able to previously do. Leah wasn't able to participate in the Jewish people, in the mission of the Jewish people, because of certain particularistic issues between her and her husband Yaakov. The getting of her sixth child enabled her to participate in the mission of the Jewish people and enabled her to function as the vehicle of the Shivtei Ka and to enter into the mission of the Jewish people and into a relationship with her husband. And I think that that is the same issue here with the Chachamim, that the Zevet Tov, which the Rambam is suggesting he's going to give to them, is a Mishnah in the context of the Ikri, which is going to enable the Chachamim to function as they're supposed to function in the Mesorah, and shift from being unable to function in the Mesorah to be people who are able to function in the Mesorah. And in that manner, as the Zevet of the Banim enabled Leah to reconnect with her husband, Yaakov, Rambam Zevet will allow the Chachamim to reconnect with their husband, who is really the Kadosh Baruch Hu that they are distanced from. So in this idea, therefore, we see that one theme carries through all three of the characters. Rambam is Avraham Avinu, and he is the endower of the standard of Zevet as that was given to Leah. And he is the continuer of the mission of David HaMelech. What unifies all three of these is that he is the bearer of the standard bearer of the Shem Hashem Kilolam of Avraham Avinu. He is the reintroducer of the concept of Valach Bedracha of Avraham Avinu. And in his circumstance, that has two fundamental expressions. In terms of the Chachamim, it has the expression of cautioning them to not hold themselves back because of a jealousy from receiving the Zevet. Take my Zevet. Don't give yourself such a Chacham that you can't take the Rambam Zevet. Because if you don't take the Zevet, you'll be like Leah, disconnected from the path of Mesorah. And if you do take the Zevet, you'll be able to be reconciled with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, like in Shir HaShirim. The wife is far from the husband, and she can become close to those. And to the Panim, he is like David HaMelech. He is teaching them the Mesorah in exile, while cautioning them, don't use this as a revolutionary movement to upset the existing social order. Now, what I want to show you is that this is not just a theme which unites B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam and Hitkatzu Chachamim and L'chuvanim Shimali, but you will see in a second that this is precisely what the Rambam says in his letter. So take a look now at this letter he wrote to Rav Yosef Ben Yehuda. Now, he's talking about the Mishnah Torah, but I don't think that the mission is different. The mission is fundamentally the same. The circumstance which in the Jewish people which caused him to write the Mishnah Torah was the same circumstance which caused him to write the Perish Mishnayos. And take a look what he said. No, that I did not write this book to become great in Israel or to publicize my name. In other words, he's well aware of the fact that the essential issue in his writing of the Mishnah Torah, which is going to be the same issue as Rabbi Roosevelt said about writing the Perish Mishnayos, only more so because he was a lot younger, is going to be the issue of competition for honor, competition for position, competition for power. I did not write this book to become great in Israel and to publicize my name. What's the clear implication? The clear implication is that it is a motivation for writing books and it is a motivation for being a chacham. He doesn't have it. Rather, I wrote it to exalt God. Since I was truly zealous for God, the Lord of Israel, when I saw people without a true book and without correct and precise religious views. In other words, now what exactly he means by correct and precise religious views, we'll see in a second. But clearly the Rambam is talking to Rabbi Yehuda ben Yosef, I think it's Rabbi Yehuda ben Aknin. He's identifying there is a circumstance here which requires zealousness for God, a people which does not have a true book, and more importantly, a people which is disconnected from correct and precise views. Now, what is that? Therefore, I did what I did for God alone. And further, I knew, and it was clear to me when I wrote it, that it would certainly fall into the hands of persons with evil and jealous hearts who will belittle its attributes and will think there is no need for it. or that is incomplete. Persons of simple intellect will not appreciate the value of what I've done. To whom it will seem of little use. Persons who are confused novice dreamers, who will have difficulty understanding simple matters whose source they did not know, persons whose intellect is too limited to be analytical as I have been, and hypocritically pious persons whose fossilized and twisted imagination will slander what it includes about the foundations of the knowledge of the faith. What do we see? We see precisely what we were expected to see. We see exactly a person who is, in fact, in the circumstance of Avraham Avinu. He's facing a Jewish people led by leaders who are hypocritically pious persons whose fossilized and twisted imagination will slander what it includes. I'm saying everybody. But that is a foundational issue that must be dealt with. The Rambam is dealing with a particular individual. He's speaking to the leadership structure, the social structure of the Jewish people as it exists. And the social structure of the people as it exists is a people without a true book, a people without foundations of the Torah. Well, what is that? That is a people which is, in essence, gone back to the circumstance of pre-Avraham Avinu. The work of Avraham Avinu must be redone in a fundamental way. The foundations of the Torah must be restored. But what are the foundations of the Torah? The foundations of the Torah are B'Shem Hashem Kilola. So in a world in which Jewish people foundationally needs the work of Avraham Avinu to be redone, the Rambam redoes that work. And that is the B'Shem Hashem Kilola, which one will see throughout his works. In that circumstance, he is going to have to deal with two fundamental types of Chachamim, who need to stop doing what they're doing, which is a derech, which is incompletely connected to a true book and to foundations of the Torah, and absorb that, and absorb that. But jealousy, that's what's going to hold them back. Jealousy and a desire to maintain their position. So to them, the Rambam says, don't be jealous. Don't allow your jealousy to keep you from the Zevid Tov, which I have to give you. It's true. A Zevid is a gift of enormous magnitude, a gift which will restore you to the Derech Nevuah, a gift that will restore you to the Ikrei Ha'amuna, a gift that will enable you to perceive your Derech of Yehadus in a totally new manner. True. But don't hold yourself back from receiving the Zevid. And he said, go, use the gift, learn it, but not in a manner which will disrupt the leadership structure of the Jewish people. Not in a manner which will be a revolutionary movement that destroys, that creates a civil war which destroys the Jewish people. Okay, any questions?
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Yeah, I still don't, just the point that we were talking about earlier, I still just don't understand where you're seeing the premise that necessarily the Rambam is identifying himself as part of the same situation as the ones we saw in the Tzukim from, as opposed to, again, that the, yeah, of course, the Pasuk quote is precise, but he's quoting a Pasuk where the content, i.e. the meaning of the words, are the ones which are the significant. Where do you see that he's identifying with the situation with which those things were spoken? Meaning, how do you see that those words are spoken in a way which was specific to that event as opposed to some universal principle of Yidias Hashem or Yoreth Hashem or whatever the case may be?
All he's saying here is that there should be a learning of Yiras Hashem.
Right.
Now, what learning of Yiras Hashem could be through many psukim. This is not a particularly Why does he choose this pasuk that a person should have Yiras Hashem? You could also say the pasuk from the Torah of Hashem Elokechem Tirav. If all he wanted to say was that there's going to be a learning of Yiras Hashem, so he could choose that. Or any one of a myriad of ones. Why does he choose this rather obscure one of David HaMelech, Vishen Oso Is Ta'amo Lifnei Avimelech? Is it a particularly clarifying idea that a person should have Yiras Hashem in general?
Well, I mean, it's not just Yiras Hashem. It's a pasuk which focuses on the teaching of Yiras Hashem, which would take away most of the pasukim in Chumash itself. And then, it's a pasuk about teaching Yiras Hashem. So then, I don't see why you can't just say that Ein Achinami. He could have picked, one of numerous pasukim. But like the Rambam talks about in the Mohan Avuchim, many times it's just you need to pick one particular. So he selects one, meaning even if there's three pesukim which could have been used, he selects one of those pesukim. Meaning when do we say that this is explicit as opposed to any other choice, or there were two equally good choices of which he then had to select one?
You could say that, but that would in no way connect it to the context of the Chachamim before and the B'Shem Hashem Kilolim before that.
What do you mean by that?
What I'm saying is that there's a progression, and that is B'Shem Hashem Vayikoshem B'Shem Hashem Kilolam is the first part of his message. Then comes Hitabtzu Chachamim and the relationship to Zevet, which is a highly particularized pasuk and statement of gift. And then comes the Chubanim Shimalu, Yirat Hashem Olam Etchem. So what you're suggesting is a pasuk which is a reading which disconnects the Yirat Hashem Olam Etchem from its context, a context which fits in perfectly with the progression starting with B'Shem Hashem Kelolam and Zeved and B'Shem Hashem and Yirat Hashem Olam Etchem, and of course with the Rambam's letters which he talks about constantly. That's not an isolated letter either, the one to Rabbi Yehuda ben Ekni, that he is dealing with a circumstance where he is sees himself beleaguered because of the circumstance of Jewish people is by no means an isolated case either. Now, why would I not at least consider that if the Rambam chooses a pasuk of a very particular kind in Tehillim, that he would be referring to Yirat Hashem in the context of that pasuk? I should certainly consider that as a possibility, no?
Right. It sounds like, though, you were taking as a premise that when the Rambam quotes a pasuk, that
yes,
he's quoting it in a way where it takes into account everything, as opposed to...
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm taking it as a premise that if the Rambam chooses a particular pasuk, he's going to be reading that pasuk in context, unless it's proven to be other.
Of course he'll read it in context. The question is every quote one which takes into account every aspect of context? Well, no, when it's in Torah Shuchsav, so it has context, it has many different levels. There's Pshat, there's Midrash, there are many different things in a pasuk. So when the Rambam quotes it, he could be quoting it in on any one of those facets, and just he might be pulling out all the facets. He might be pulling out one facet.
Right. I'm going to assume that when he chooses a pasuk, that he's choosing it in its essential context. Now, if there's some reason to think that's not the case, I'm open to that possibility, but for me, that'll be the secondary possibility. I'll need evidence that he's not reading it in context. And in this case, not only does the context... not only is there no evidence that he's not reading it in context, the context is exactly in line with the progression of pesukim he brings and with everything he says about his work.
What do you mean by everything he says about his work?
when the Rambam talks about his work, he again and again comes back to the same idea, which is that his mission is to restore the Shem Hashem to the Jewish people in terms of Ikrim, which is the essential sense of the Shem Hashem Kelola.
Okay.
He's a Torah, B'Shem Hashem Kelolam, is the consistent unifying theme of everything the Rambam does, and that he is doing so in the face of tremendous resistance and disconnect from Shem Hashem of Gullus. Is that what I'm saying, Yaakov?
I need to think about it. I mean,
You think about that.
Maybe I'll call you later this week if I have a little bit clearer what's bothering me.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. So I'll stop at this point, and I would just say, with this in mind, perhaps reread Yaakov and everybody, perhaps reread Rambam's introduction to the Ikrim in Perek Chelek, and I think that you'll notice there that this reading of his introduction to his Parish Mishnayos fits in with that rather well. That what exactly is the Rambam saying there about the nature of his of Mesorah in that time? And I think that it's pretty clear that the nature of Mesorah at that time is that while there are individuals who are maintaining the Shem Hashem Kel Olam, the circumstance in the community is very dire. Very dire indeed, and what the Rambam is doing through the introduction to Perek Chelek is identifying that problem and seeking to address it by restoring Ikrim to the Jewish people in a manner which does not shake up the leadership structure, because he allows room for those people who aren't capable or who internally just can't find the wherewithal to carry through the reading of the Ikrim to their source. He says, better you should stop at this point, because what I'm about to say will just damage you. So yes, there is that careful balance of David HaMelech between teaching those who can be banim and not disrupting the Jewish social order, which is the circumstance that it is. I think that's a fairly clear outgrowth of reading the introduction to Chelek. So that's what that's fundamentally about.
Rabbi, are you talking about the entire introduction to Chelek or just the Ikrim part?
I'm talking about the parts before that. The introduction to the Ikrim essentially divides into an identifying of the Jewish circumstance in the time of the Rambam, which is essentially one of a reading of the Torah through a distorted lens on the part of the vast majority of the people, Chachamim and ordinary folks alike, and which doesn't, of course, preclude the very individuals who have withstood the impact of Galut and are still connected to the Ikrim. It's not talking about individuals, but as a general circumstance, the circumstance then is as we know it today, that there are certain extremely isolated individuals who are aware of the Ikrim and are learning the Torah through that lens, and the vast majority are viewing God as a human being with emotions and physical attributes, and that's their Jewishness. That's not something new. The Rambam is saying that was in his time. And he's addressing that issue in the introduction to Chelek. And he's saying that he's first of all naming the circumstance for what it is. And then he identifies the significance of that. That means that people are going to read the Torah Shebiktav and the Midrashim in a manner which far from bringing us to Hashem, will make us more distant from Hashem, and that will manifest itself in a misreading of Gan Eden. It'll manifest itself in a misunderstanding of Tchiyas HaMeisim and Mashiach and all the core concepts of the Torah. And then he goes on. That's step one. Step two is to show that this misreading of the Torah and a misunderstanding of the core concepts of the Torah, like Gan Eden and Mashiach and Tchiyas HaMeisim, is resultant from a erroneous methodology of reading Midrashim literally, which in essence comes from a disconnect from science and Chochmah, and a failure to appreciate the way in which Chochmah is taught to a national entity through hints and mishalim and allusions. And what this leads to is three fundamental groups. A vast majority group of so-called Kat Rishon, who are people who simplistically follow what they've been taught, whether it be leaders who don't know what they're talking about and give speeches about God in physical terms, or in nationalistic terms, or in whatever terms will give them power in their community. The Darshanim, he calls them. Then there's a second group of Jewish studies professors who consider the rabbis to be idiots. And there's a third, very small group who realize what the situation is and who realize that what's happening is a tremendous distortion of what the Torah is because of lack of foundations and are looking to understand the Torah in its true light. And that's the circumstance. And that's the situation.
And what about the third part?
That's the third group. Is that
the third part of his introduction to Chelek?
The third part is in essence which of course he introduces with that if this is bothering you, stop reading right now because the analogy he uses is just like the Egyptian Jews who were leaving Egypt loved the meat and the garlic and the spices of Egypt, and they couldn't process fine manna, you know? So he said, stop right now, because that's who you are. You're a person who is Egyptian and will not be able to process the fine manna. And what is that fine manna? That fine manna is a reframing and re-explanation of what Gan Eden is and what Mashiach is and what the good of the Torah is. And moving towards the Ikra. In other words, the introduction to Chelek is foundationally the exact same thing, namely, Hitkatzu Chachamim v'imdu alam etchem. You who are giving these drashas, which are really materializings of God, and literal statements about the midrashim, imdu alam etchem. Why? Because zeved tova zavetchem. There's a tremendous foundational shift that you can undergo if you will just allow yourself the humility to take it. And l'chuvanim shimuli yirat Hashem alamadchem. Those who are followers of the Rambam can get a tremendous gift as well, but they are enjoined to take these ikrim and be very cautious in the manner in which they use them, so as not to destroy the people of Israel through a sort of revolutionary fervor.
When you said reread the Ikrim, you were referring to which part?
What?
When you said reread the Ikrim,
I'm talking about if you take a look at the Rambam's introduction to Perek Chelek, you'll see that's fundamentally the flow of what's happening there. Any other questions?
Rabbi?
Yes.
This is a little bit, it relates to that letter, but he also says he wrote the Mishnah Torah for, you know, the reason that you're giving, which is the essential focus of today's class, but also when he gets old, he'll be able to remind himself of the halacha.
Oh, for sure. In other words, that's
all. So he said, so how does that fit in? I only did it for glorifying Hashem.
Right, for Kiddush
Hashem. And for my own personal, is that two separate halachas?
No. He doesn't say it and. In different places, he says different things. Because he taught, but really, these are all causally linked. When the Rambam talks about stuck and chesed in the Mor Nevuchim, he brings out the fact that when a person does chesed to another person, one sense of chesed is material. Namely, you give the person something which there's their chok upon you. Someone gives you a service and you pay for it. That's tzedek in a certain sort of sense. That's justice in the sense of applying the universality of law to oneself. But that's a relatively immature manner of applying the concept of law to oneself. Why? Because, yes, the fact that there is a universal chachma in all the Bruim and all the Nitzayim, of course, expresses itself in the fact that one should arouse oneself from the primitive egocentrism that would make me think that a person gives me service and I don't pay for it, right? That's, of course, a violation of the fact that all of us are members of a system governed by chachma, imein ami li meili, right? If I'm not for myself, who will be for me? But if I'm only for myself, what am I? You see? Yes, I have a primary responsibility to take care of myself. But I must do so in a manner of justice, which doesn't contradict that all I am is a member of a species, which is a member of a causal order, that is receiving its good from the causal system created by God. So the first expression of that is not violating other people's rights. A person gives me a service, I should pay them. And that, of course, is an expression of justice. But it's not the highest expression of justice. The highest expression of justice is when I recognize the reality of chachma doesn't just mean that I asur mira. It doesn't just mean I shouldn't act as if I am the God. It more importantly means that I should be developing my soul. It doesn't just mean that I shouldn't act like an egocentric person. It means I should act like a mind. And acting like a mind means organizing all of my activity so I can enjoy chachma and benefit from it to the maximum that is possible. That's the higher expression of recognizing the reality of Shem Hashem. So what does that mean, the Rambam says? It says, when the chacham gives the tzedakah to the person, when he benefits another, there are two benefits that occur there. One is that person materially gets the money that he needs. But more importantly, is that the benefit that I'm doing is to my own soul. But those aren't contradictory to each other. They're properties of the same act. In harmonizing myself with the reality of the superior nature of Chachma, both things necessarily occur. I want to do those acts which maximally cause expression of Chachma in the social system. So yes, of course, I give that person the tzedakah. But the ultimate benefit there is not that that person has $10. The ultimate benefit is that my soul is now closer to acting in accordance with the reality of things that there is a governing chachma in the world. So the essential entity which is benefited when I give tzedakah is my soul is benefited. I'm doing tzedakah to my own soul. So when Rambam created the Mishneh Torah, both things are true. Kiddush Hashem necessarily means, yes, he did that act which maximally enabled others to know the Shem Hashem like Avraham Avinu, and know the Torah which follows from that. Of course. But in so doing, the Rambam was benefiting himself more than anything else. He was necessarily also creating a work that would cause him to be able to know the Torah in the best possible way, especially as he got older. Those are not disconnected.
Right.
Okay?
Yes, those. Yeah, good.
Anything else?
Just a quick, Chazara, one point. In other words, Leah's saying that Zevulun.
Yes. Is an expression of her having gotten her sixth son, which is analogous to the Shisha Sidre Mishnah, as Leah got her sixth son, and that enabled her to reconnect with her husband. The Jewish people, via the agency of Rambam, gets its sixth son, namely gets the Shisha Sidre Mishnah, along with the introductions and the Ikrim and Yesodos necessary to reconnect with our husband, who is metaphorically in Shir HaShirim, is the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Okay? Rabbi? Sounds like I'm disconnected here.
No, I think you're not disconnected.
I'm not. Can you see who's calling over there? Yeah. Rabbi Erstel, are you still there? Looks like he's gone, Dan. All right, at least we got it on tape, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want me to post it with any particular title?
No, just call it Rambam the Renaissance Man 2.
Okay.
Okay, Dan. Talk to you later.
All right, Rabbi, I hate to bother you about this, but did you get a chance to read my tefillah thing?
I will try to look at it today. Okay, Dan?
Yeah, okay.
My parents were here, so I was a little bit preoccupied.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay, Jim.
All right.
Thanks, and talk to you later.
Okay, thanks.
Bye. Well.